The honor of Rosh Chodesh Adar, and only slightly because Parshas Truma is very technical and just has to deal with all of the vessels of the Mishkan, and I just found it so much more interesting and exciting to prepare for the Megillah. Not that all the Parshas of the Torah are not exciting and interesting, but I just thought we would take a break in preparation for Purim and learn the Megillah. Let us learn the Megillah. So I think we did this last year also. I like, you know, everyone's familiar with the story, so I don't feel like we need to start in the beginning and go through, but let's just take out sections and learn it through. So we'll probably do it this week, and then I guess next week also we'll probably finish. So I thought to do this year the fourth chapter, Perek Dalet. So it's on page 1255 in your Chumashim in the back. There is the story of the Megillah. Perek Dalet picks up. Haman has already risen to power. That began in the third chapter. It's on the previous page if you just want to flip through that. The Megillah, of course, opens with the story of Vashti and with Esther, and where she is appointed into the as the new queen. And Mordechai, at the end of the second chapter, saves the king from the plot of Bigson and Seresh, who tried to kill the king, and was written down into the book. They were hung, and then the king appoints Haman. Now, Haman, of course, rises to greatness, except for one little Jew who refuses to bow down to him, and that is, of course, the figure of Mordechai. He wasn't really a little Jew. He was actually the leader of the Jewish people. He was a Navi. He was a prophet. And he refused to bow down. Haman cannot take this, and contrives of a plan with the help of his family that he is going to draw a lot, and they're just going to wipe out all of the Jewish people. And that's what took place at the very end of the third chapter. He convinces the king of this. And letters have been sent throughout the kingdom to be prepared on the 13th day of Adar. There's going to be a big massacre, and they need to be ready. And the last verse is the last pasuk in the third chapter. Harotzim yotzu duchufim vidvar hamelach. The couriers went forth hurriedly by the order of the king. The hados nitzna v'shushan abiron. The edict was distributed in Shushan, the capital. And the king and Haman sat down to drink. The city of Shushan was bewildered. This, of course, is read in the tune of Eicha as we get to this point in the Megillah. They're sitting down to party, and that's where the story is up to, where we will pick up today. Okay, says the Megillah, this pasuk is also read in the tune of Eicha, when we read it on Purim. Mordechai yodos ko asher na'asa. Mordechai knew all that had taken place. Vayikra Mordechai es bigadov. Mordechai rips his clothing. Vayilbash sak vo'efer. And he dons instead sackcloth and ashes. And he goes out into the middle of the city. He cries a loud and bitter cry. That's the pasuk. So the pasuk again, Mordechai understood or knew that which had taken place. What was it that Mordechai, what did he need to know more than anything else? Meaning, he received the same letter that everybody else received, right? Why was the city of Shushan bewildered at this point? Well, they had just received the letter from the king that on the 13th day of the month of Adar, in that coming year, there was going to be a big massacre. Everybody needed to be prepared and ready for war. And Mordechai knew all that which had taken place. Did he know anything more or less than anybody else? But what's the Megillah saying? That Mordechai knew that which had taken place. Everybody knew. So we'll see in a second. Esther's the only person who doesn't know. Esther's not on the city street. She's not receiving the letter. She's the only one who doesn't know what's going on. So what does it mean? Mordechai yados kol asher na'asa. And Mordechai knew all that had taken place. So Rashi says as follows. You don't have Rashi in front of you. I'll read it to you. Rashi writes, Baal HaChalom Omar Lo. The Baal HaChalom, Baal HaChalom is the dreamer. I asked Rabbi Pansky exactly what this means, if it means that he had like a prophecy or if it was a person who had a prophecy. I'm not sure exactly what that means, that the Baal HaChalom, the brothers referred to Yosef as the Baal HaChalomos. He was a dreamer. He had all those dreams, Yosef, that he told his brothers. So I'm not sure exactly what Rashi means when he says that, the Baal HaChalom. But what did the Baal HaChalom, what did Mordechai, he seems to be receiving some form of a prophecy. Omar lo, shehiskimu ha'elyonim al kach. That in the upper worlds they've agreed to this. Rashi says, it's not that Mordechai, what does it mean Mordechai yadol, and Mordechai knew, and he didn't know, he knew what everybody else knew. He knew he had received some form of a vision, a prophecy, a dream, something, that this was agreed up in heaven, that this is what should take place. That there was a decree sent out upon the Jewish people, that on the 13th day of Adar they're going to be wiped out, and that's what it was wanted up in the heavens. And Mordechai knew that that was what was supposed to happen, that he knew that it was okay and correct, and that's what was going, that was a decree upon the Jewish people. And then Rashi brings two reasons why up in Shemayim, up in heavens, they should have made such a decree. First thing that Rashi says is the Jewish people bowed down to idols during the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, who was the Babylonian king who destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. So the Jews were guilty of idolatry during that time. And the second reason Mordechai says they had benefited, they enjoyed, they went to the party of Achashverosh. This was back years before when Achashverosh took the reins. He made a big party. And this here Rashi is quoting from the Gemara, from Chazal, the sages who say that Mordechai went around to all the Jews and said, don't go to Achashverosh's party. You're not supposed to be there. And they said, but it's going to be kosher food and kosher wines. They said, don't go. And they all went anyway, and they all enjoyed and partook in the festivities, and became part of the culture, part of the people. And Mordechai says, what Rashi understands, what does it mean, Mordechai yada, he knew all that had taken place. Rashi understands that to mean he knew that in heaven they had decreed this, and the reasons why they had decreed this in heaven was because, A, years before, now remember, the first story takes place about 70 years before, after the destruction. 70 years before they had bowed down to idols during the days of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king. And more recently, there were 11 years between the beginning of the Purim story and its conclusion. So about 10, 11 years before, the Jews had partaken of the Su'ud, the feast that Achashverosh made when he took control of the kingdom. Now both reasons that Rashi writes are fascinating, because right now we're looking at a decree in front of the Jewish people, a decree which had, until this point in world history, never been seen before. If you think about, I guess you go back to Paro and Mitzrayim, but if you think in where in Jewish history we are, this is the first 70 years following the first exile of the Jewish people after the destruction of the temple. So we had gone from Mitzrayim, from Egypt, Hashem took us out, we spent 40 years in the desert, we spent 14 years conquering and settling the land of Israel, and then it took, I don't know exactly, I think it's about 100 or so years until the Beis HaMikdash was built. And then the Beis HaMikdash stood in Eretz Yisrael for 410 years. I think the second one stood for longer. One was 410, one was 420. So 400 and some odd number of years. And that was destroyed, and the Jews were sent into exile. That's where we are at in the Jewish historical perspective. And now there's a decree to wipe them out. I always like pointing out when we talk about Purim, you have to imagine the historical perspectives. We are exiled Jews. We have all lived in exile our whole lives. We have known nothing but exile. Our parents lived in exile. Our grandparents lived in exile. Our parents before them lived in exile. 2,000 consecutive years of exile. We don't know anything else. And in fact, the fact that the exile has been so long is a source of strength to us that we're still here. As the exile goes, and there are Jews still here, and there are classes being taught in Atlanta, Georgia, in Torah, in the year 2009, is a testimony to the fact that God will never forget us, and there'll be a time we're going to go back. So our exile is almost, its length is a source of strength for us. We're going to be around. Somehow we exist. It's impossible without a land, without a people, without a call. Like, how can we be here still? So it's a source of strength for us. Look what's going on. We have Israel back again. It's a Jewish government. 60 years. We're strong. 5 million people live there. It's an amazing thing. But put yourself back in the Jews of Babylonia. This is the first exile you've ever experienced. Are you ever going to be back? Is God still with you? Are you ever going to experience the miraculous events again? You are living in a totally different perspective historically, never having been in exile before. Mm-hmm. Your parents were never in exile. Your parents were in the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael. And their great-great-grandparents came directly from the desert into the land and settled it. What's this about? What's this hidden face of God? Who's ever seen anything? God's still around when we don't see Him. It's never happened before. We've always been able to point to Him. So it's a very different historical perspective. And now, in that perspective, there's a decree to wipe out the Jewish people from the face of the earth. Man, woman, child, just destroy them all. Where's God? Haven't seen Him.
Does this decree say that it applies only to the Jews?
So if you look at verse 13, in chapter 3, go back, page 1255. Yeah. Letters were sent by courier to all the king's provinces to destroy, to slay, to exterminate all Jews, young and old, children and women in a single day. There's a panic. Says the Megillah, and Mordechai knew why it happened. Mordechai Yadol, what did he know? He knew right, everything. No, he knew more. He knew that in Shemayim they had decreed this upon the Jewish people. For what? Because 70 years earlier, during the time of Nebuchadnezzar, when he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, the Jews bowed down to idols. 10 years earlier, when Achashverosh took control, the Jews went to his feast. And now, where everything is falling apart, the world around us is being destroyed, Mordechai knows why this is taking place. Because years before, they had done things wrong. That's how Rashi learns. Well, Mordechai Yadol, what did Mordechai know more than everybody else? Rashi understands Mordechai knew the meanings behind this. He understands the reasons why this is. The Vilna Gaon, who we're going to be reading a lot about the Vilna Gaon, he wrote an explanation to Megillas Esther as well. So he writes a little different than Rashi. It's called Asher Nasa. Mordechai knew all that had taken place. Perish. Hu Yadoz Kol HaNasa. He knew what took place between the conversations, the adding between Haman and Mordechai, the exchange of the money, how Haman had offered all of the wealth to be able to destroy all the Jews, and Achashverosh accepted it even without all the money. He knew all that. And then the Vilna Gaon adds, V'gam Shehoya Bishvilo Mashalo Hoya Kara. And Mordechai knew that this was because of him in a more direct sense. How was this more directly, this decree, because of Mordechai? Why was this decree directly because of Mordechai?
Because he didn't bow down.
So Mordechai Yadoz Kol Asher Nasa. Mordechai knew all that had taken place. He knew, according to the Vilna Gaon, that he's really the reason. Now Rashi put the reason onto the Jewish people for things which had taken place 70 and 10 years before. The Vilna Gaon understands when Mordechai went out to the streets and he knew why this was taking place, he knew that it was because of him. He knew that he refused to bow down to Haman. Now, did Mordechai think he was right or wrong for not bowing down to Haman?
He was right.
Of course he thought he was right. He was the Gadol Hador, he was the leader of the generation, and he believed strongly that he was not allowed to bow down to Haman. He refused to. But he was afraid. But still, what happens when you do something which is the right thing, and now you see you're bringing destruction to the entire Jewish people mm-hmm. because of that. Mm-hmm. So he was afraid. So there's a perish that I like. This book I like using. There are two commentaries in this. One is from the Vilna Gaon, mm-hmm. and one was from called the Yosef Lekach, which is an expanded version of the Vilna Gaon. So he adds, there's a concept in Halacha that Gemara uses often called Megalgalin Chus Al Yedei Zakai. Megalgal is from the word like an agala, like a roller to wheel. Like we cause a zchus, we cause meritorious things to happen through somebody who merits it. U'megalgalin chova al yedei chayef. And we're megalgal, we cause bad things, negative things to happen on the backs of somebody who is chayef, who doesn't merit. So that the Gemara often will use this as a phrase of, if you were the agent of something good happening to the Jewish people. So yeah, Hashem allows good things to happen through someone who is zakai, someone who is deserving, who merits it. And if you're the cause of something bad, so then it's a sign that you might be chayiv up in heaven. You might be obligated, or you might be liable, because heaven chose you as the chariot to bring about something bad. So if the Gemara uses it, you could sometimes see where you are through whether or not you were an agent of bringing about something good or something bad, what your standing is. If you're the agent of good things, you say, but it wasn't really me. Yeah, but in heaven, they used you as the chariot to bring it into the world. You must be Zaka. You must be somebody who's meritorious up in heaven. And if you're the chariot of bad things, then you don't want to be on that end. So Mordechai, so the Vilna Gaon learns, he's a little bit afraid. Mordechai Yadoz, Kol Asher Nasa. Mordechai knew all that was taking place. Again, the simple meaning is he didn't know anything more than everybody else. He got the same letter. No, he knew. He knew, says the Vilna Gaon, this was on his account. This is taking place. He had refused to bow down to Haman, and he thought he was right, but he was afraid maybe this is an application of him having done something horribly wrong at some point, that heaven should use him and his actions to bring about the destruction of the Jewish people. In any case, Rashi and the Vilna Gaon seem to differ. Rashi seems to say it was the Jewish people's fault from things which took place years earlier. That's what Mordechai knew. And the Vilna Gaon seems to take the approach that Mordechai knew that this was his own doing, it was his own actions, that this was taking place because of the fact that he had not bowed down to Haman in more recent time. So what does Haman do? Excuse me, what does Mordechai do? He knows all that had taken place. He rips his clothing. Vayikra Mordechai is bigadov. Vayubash sak v'efer. So why does somebody rip their clothing?
Morning.
It's morning. It's always a sign of mourning. Now, for those of us who have unfortunately gone through that experience, we rip our clothing at an intense point of mourning, and it's a sign, it's not a sign, but it's an indication of years, not of giving up is a wrong word, but a finality. Like, it's over. Cannot bring this person back, and I rip my clothing out of the intense grief, the pain, the suffering, the loss that I have. So Mordechai rips his clothing, but nothing had happened yet. Right? When do we rip our clothing? We don't rip our clothing when someone is diagnosed. We only rip our clothing and the finality of it. It's the pain, because now it's so painful, it's so hurtful. You hear that ripping of the clothing, of the sign of the mourner, of a velos, the finality, the acceptance of the finality. Mordechai goes out and he rips his clothing, and he dons sak, an efer. He puts on ash cloth, and he puts on ashes literally on his head, and he goes out to the city, and he cries out a za'akah gedola u'mara. So the Yosef Leket, this other commentator, writes that this kriya was not a kriya of mourning. It was not a kriya, it was not a ripping of his clothing as one would tear his clothing as a sign of mourning. And he writes in his proof is that Mordechai hadn't given up hope. The whole purpose of this chapter is going to be focused on him telling Esther, you got to do something, you got to save us. Why would he be ripping his clothing as a sign of mourning when he's still hoping to salvage the situation? That's not when we rip kriya. So he writes that this is a ripping of clothing. He writes, very interesting, I share this with you, that I just saw this for the first time myself last night. I find it a very interesting idea. He ripped his clothing in order to be able to get on, to get his clothing off faster, to get on his sak v'efer. In other words, he ripped off his clothing, v'yilbash, and then he put on instead sak v'efer. Why does it put on sak v'efer? Why do you wear it? What is it? You find this often in Tanakh. They don sakla. What is that? So the Vilna Gaon writes that is an aspect of tshuva. There's clothing, so to speak, that a person wears when they go into a form of tshuva. Chamisha darchei tshuva hamufurash. The Gemara lists five ways, patterns, behaviors of one who wants to do repentance, wants to do tshuva. And the first ones are sak v'efer. That's one of the first things that a person does. Change your clothing. You can't wear your royal clothing, because when you wear your normal clothing, it's hard to humble yourself when you're wearing your normal clothing. So the first thing to do is you put on a level far lesser than yourself, a beggar's form of clothing, and you humble yourself before God. So Mordechai, in his haste, when he saw what had taken place, he just read a letter that the Jewish people were about to be doing, he ripped his clothing, getting them off of him, to put on his sak v'efer, to put on his sackcloth and his ashes in order to begin the process of tshuva. Where does he go? He goes into the middle of the ear. He goes into the middle of the city and he cries out a za'akah gedolah u'mara, a great call and a bitter call. Says the Vilna Gaon. The Navi describes this here in the Megillah as a za'aka gedolah, two ways. It's a great call and a bitter call. It's a crying out, a za'aka gedolah umara. Says the Vilna Gaon, gedolah, why was it great? Why was it a great crying? Al hatzara ha-gedolah hazos. Because there was a great need. The entire Jewish people just had a decree sent down upon them that they were going to be destroyed. And it was also bitter, says the Vilna Gaon, that was bitter for him, shebishvilo ba'a kolzos. Again, he brings in the idea that it was because of him that this has come. Why is Mordechai the main guy in the streets, like yelling and screaming? He's at the center of this. He's the cause because of behaviors which he did, which he thought were correct, but at the end of the day, he does believe that he is the cause of this. Okay. I think there was one that point that I want to bring up later. Okay, that's the first one. Let's go on. Yeah.
I learned that Yaakov was frowned upon that he bowed in front of Esau 7 times before he met him. There's some commentaries that say that it really wasn't appropriate for him to, you know, give his brother so much, you know, kavod, and for Mordechai to bow to Haman, a man who had served under him in the army, his thing with the shoe, the whole, it would have been like the same thing, would have been wrong. It seemed like it would have been wrong,
right,
to give him that kind of kavod, like, in terms of learning it that way. Does it make any sense?
Yeah, he didn't do it. 100%.
So that's why maybe he didn't do it.
Yeah. So where does Mordechai go now? He's taken off his regular clothing, he's donning sackcloth, he's wearing ashes on his head, he's screaming in the middle of the streets. Where does he go? Right until the gate of the king. Why? Ki ein lavo el shar hamelech bilvush sak. Because you can't go into the king's palace wearing sackcloth. It's actually brought in halacha as the source of when you daven, wearing appropriate clothing when you daven, because when you enter into the palace of the king, you can't be adorned in inappropriate clothing. Halacha brings this phrase, borrowing the phrase here from Megillas Esther, you can't go into the palace of the king wearing sackcloth. So Mordechai goes right up there, but not all the way in. So the Yosef Leket asks the following question. Why is he going to the king's palace?
Esther was in there.
Okay, and therefore what?
Because it's somebody known.
Excellent. Who does he want to let know?
Esther,
good. You've heard the story before, right?
No.
Right? Mordechai needs to get word to Esther. Esther, you gotta save the Jewish people. You're our only hope. So where does he go? He goes to tell Esther. Okay, so you need to speak to Esther. So what do? So you put on clothing that prohibits you from getting to who you need to get to. Why don't you go speak to Esther first? Walk right in the way that you've done all the time. Speak your piece. Beg and plead before to do what she needs to do. Go back home, put on your sackcloth, and scream in the middle of the streets and do all you need to do as far as your own personal repentance. First thing that he does is he immediately takes off his clothing, puts on his sackcloth, and then he goes to tell Esther. Well, how far does he get?
Only to the gate.
Right, he only gets to the gate. Why doesn't he get any farther? Because he's wearing a sackcloth. Well, if your whole purpose is going there is to tell her, and you know you can't go in there, everybody knows you can't go into the palace of the king wearing sackcloth, that's all that he got to, why didn't he tell her first and then don your clothing? So he says a fascinating thing. He says, Tafas umnus avoisav. He grabbed hold onto the trait of his fathers. Now, if you remember, those who were here a couple of weeks ago, this was a phrase from Rashi. You see how the commentators, they weave in very poetically the same phrases that you find elsewhere. Anyone remember where that phrase was? Tafas umnas avoisav?
Sounds familiar, but I don't know.
So when the Jewish people found themselves in the desert, and they just left Mitzrayim, they got to the Yam Suf, they got to the Sea of Reeds, and they got stuck because the water was in front of them. They turned around and the Egyptians were behind them. So what did they do? Vayizak el Hashem, Vayizak, well, they cried out to Hashem. Rashi comments, Tosu umnos avosam. They grabbed hold on the craft of their fathers, Avram and davened, and Yitzchok and davened, and Yaakov and davened, and now they were stuck, so they grabbed hold onto the umnos of their father. They grabbed hold onto the trait of their father. We spoke about what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. So this commenter, the Yosef Leket, borrows that same phrase. Mordechai's got a problem. Letters were just sent out throughout the nation that the Jewish people are about to be destroyed. So what's the first thing that he does? He grabs hold onto the craft of his fathers. takes off his clothing, puts on his sackcloth, and heads off into the streets to yell, scream, and begin the tshuva process. He should have gone to Esther first. That's what he should have done. So he writes as follows: Avalo rotzo lahakdim lehishtadlus al yidei bnei adam. He has got two things that he needs to do, Mordechai. We need to do our hishtadlus. We need to do our in this world appropriate behaviors to remedy a situation. Any Jew who says there's a problem and he sits in his house and he says, "I'll just say Tehillim all day and it will go away." So what do we say to such a person? It's inappropriate. You got to do what you got to do. If it's speaking to the government officials, if it's starting, you can't just sit at home and say Tehillim all day. You got to take care of business. But you also have to say Tehillim at home, right? You got to do both. You got to do your hishtadlus, your all that you can do between yourself and Hashem, and you got to do all that you can do between yourself and the world that we live in. Which one should you do first?
I guess the world that we live in.
So Mordechai is teaching us the opposites. Mordechai had two things that he needed to do. He needed to speak to Esther. He needed to tell Esther, "Esther, you got to intervene. You got to storm the gates of heaven, and you got to storm the gates of Achashverosh. You got to go in there. And I also need to do my part. I can't storm the gates of Achashverosh, but I could storm the gates of heaven. Which one should I do first?" So Mordechai said, "Well, I could go to Esther first, or I could storm the gates of heaven first." Says Mordechai, "I'm going straight to heaven first." And before he wanted to speak to Esther, before he said, "You got to do your part. You got to speak to the king. You got to convince him. You got to throw a party." That's a very worldly type of hishtadlus, what she's about to do. He said, "Before I go there, I'm first storming the gates of heaven." And the first thing that he did is he took off his clothing, puts on a sackcloth, puts on the ashes, goes out to the street and starts yelling and screaming and beginning his tshuva process. And now he says, "I got to go speak to Esther." Well, he's got a problem because he's wearing his sackcloth. All right, so the story will continue. But says Yosef Lekach, wouldn't it have made more sense for him to have gone there first, deal with Esther, and then come out? He didn't want to do that. Where did he learn this from? Where did he learn that the first thing that you do is you storm the gates of heaven, and then you storm the gates of Achashverosh? Lefikach, Lavash Hasak, first he wore his sackcloth, then he started screaming, then he went to go tell Esther, Shekein Yaakov Lohechen HaMincha LeEsav Rak Achrei HaTzfilah. Yaakov had a battle with his brother Esav when he was coming back from his 22 years with his uncle Lavan. He returned to the land of Israel. And who did he meet along the way? Esav with 400 men. Yaakov hasn't seen him in 20 years. Esav wanted to kill him when he last left. So Yaakov prepares three things. What does he do? He sends gifts, davens, and he prepares for battle. Says Mordechai, but what did Yaakov do first? Go back to the story of Chosh Rishi Davins. He converses with Hashem, help me out here. I'm going to prepare for battle. But the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to be mispalel that I should be saved. So Mordechai says, I'm going to go to Esther. But the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to storm the gates of heaven. So the first thing that he does is he takes off his clothing, begins his tshuva process in the streets, and then he says, I need to go tell Esther. Well, he didn't get very far because as the Megillah says, he only got ad lifnei shar hamelech. He only got up to the gates of the king because you can't get into the gates of the king while wearing sackcloth. Gimel. Uvechol medino medino. Now you'll notice in your art scroll, they put that like in... in parentheses, because this is a little break from the actual story between Mordechai and Esther. It sort of gives us an overview as to what's going on throughout the entire land. Uvechol medino medino. This also is laned with the tune of Eicha. Malkom asher dvar hamelach v'daso magia. Wherever the king's command and his decree extended, Evel gadol layuhudim. There was great mourning amongst the Jews. Vitzoim uvchi umispeid. There was fasting, weeping, and wailing. Sak vo'efer yutza lorabim. Now, the way that art school translates this is, and sackcloth and ashes were yutza lorabim, to the majority, to most of them. So let's break down this verse. So what do we have here? We have every province, wherever the word got to, wherever the letters extended, there was going to be destruction. There was an Evel Gadol LaYehudim. There was a great mourning. A great mourning amongst the Jews. And then there were five things which were done. When you could break down the five, it seems, into categories of three and two. How would you break down the category of the practices that the Jews took upon themselves? Okay, fasting. Okay, that's one. Who did that? Who did the fasting, weeping, and wailing?
All of the people.
Excellent. Seems like everybody did that. Wherever the word of the king spread so that they knew about the impending destruction, all of those people fasted, wept, and wailed. Most of them put on sackcloth and ashes. So clearly there was a distinction. Everybody fasted, wept, and wailed. Sackcloth and ashes. Most of them. Larabim, I don't know if you would even, we're going to see that the commentators don't even translate it as most, but as more many. Like, there were multitudes who did it, but it wasn't everybody who did everything else. So two comments. Number one is on Avel Gadol, a large mourning. So one of the commentators, Yosef Fleckett, asks, is there a Avel Gadol and an Avel Katan? Is there like a major mourning and a minor mourning? If you're mourning, you're mourning. It was a destruction. What does it mean in Avil Gadol? So one of the commentators point out that this was the reason for this. Let me read you his language. I like to do that when I can. Here it is. Generally, the Noyek Sheba Olam, Kol Ha'Avelim Avelon Mismait V'Hoylech Adashiva Sayam. A person who experiences a loss, it's most intense at the time of the loss and the burial, and then it lessens. The whole purpose of the Shiva is to get you through that period. The first 3 days are more intense, and then the final Shiva, and Shloshim, and then the 12 months. But it's a lessening process as we begin the process of accepting the new reality of the world that we live in. It's a painful one, but the process lessens as time goes on. What happens if the mourning that you're experiencing is because there's a destruction of the Jewish people, which is going to happen in 5 months, and now another day goes by? Does that lessen your mourning, or does that increase your mourning? Every day that goes by increases your anxiety, increases your feeling of the doom is coming, the end of the world is at hand. Another day went by, another day is closer. What happened today? So he says, Tokfo Yom Rishon. So generally we view in halacha the first day of mourning as the most intense, and then it begins to lessen. It takes years, but it's beginning. It begins to lessen. The Avel Gadol of the Yehudim of Shushan was one which you got the intensity of the report, and then it increased as time went on. Every day that went on, where is the salvation going to come from? How is this going to end? How is this going to stop? Who's going to save us from this? And therefore, the language of the Megillah is an Avel Gadol LeYehudim. This was a great or major mourning for the Jewish people because it went against all other forms of mourning that they'd experienced until that point, which you got more used to, and here it just got worse and worse as time went by. Second comment on this pasuk, the Vilna Gaon says, the tzomu v'chi, the five things, you have fasting, weeping, and wailing for everybody, and sak v'efer, so the Vilna Gaon points out that fasting, weeping, and wailing was accessible to all. And everybody should do that. Everybody should fast when there's a tragedy taking place amongst the Jewish people. Everybody should weep, and everybody should wail. Donning sackcloth and ashes, that says the Vilna Gaon, that's l'rabim, which he understands to mean, ein anoy gelo l'roshe om. Those are for the leaders of the people. That's not open to everybody. You don't just put on sackcloth. You have to be on a certain level. There are certain forms of behavior which are not for the hamon am. They're not for the general populace. Because you want to wail, you want to weep, you want to fast, everybody can do that. You want to walk around in a sackcloth with ash on your head. We have a phrase, it's called mechse kiyua. It looks like you're a haughty person. Like, who are you to be doing something like that? The phrase of Gemara says there was one of the sages was walking around in black clothing, which was a sign of mourning in the times of the Talmud. The Gemara says, what are you in black for? Who are you mourning? You didn't lose any relatives. So he says, I'm mourning the destruction of the temple. He said to him, who are you to be mourning the destruction of the temple like it's your own relative? You think you're on such a level? You don't know how to do that. It's mechzik. He looks like it's forbidden to do certain things that make you stand out as above everybody else. He says, I'm actually a great person, and the Gemara goes on to record what he did and what he said to prove that he was allowed, it was permissible for him to mourn publicly the destruction of the temple because he had actually established himself as somebody who was different and capable of doing so. But generally, we have halachas which require a person to behave within the spectrum of normal for everybody else, and you're not allowed to do things like that. So the Vilna Gaon says that's why the Megillah breaks this down into this way. It says, everybody went out to fasting, weeping, and wailing, sackcloth, and ashes. That was Larabim. That was the Roshei Ha'am, the leaders of the people. They were the only ones who actually went ahead and they did that. Okay, let's move on. Dalet. Vatavoyna na'aros Esther v'sariseha v'yagidula. So Esther's maids and chamberlains, they came and they told her about it. They don't know what's going on. They never got a letter. When the letters went out, they didn't send one to the palace itself. They sent it out to all the provinces and all the cities in the Medina of Achashverosh. So who's the only person right now on the planet in Achashverosh's kingdom who doesn't know about this? It's Esther. So her maidservants, who have clearly at this point discovered a relationship between Esther and Mordechai, because remember the Megillah said that he used to come visit her every day to see how she was doing. So they come back and they say, Esther, you're not going to believe this. Your uncle Mordechai, they didn't know he was her uncle. They knew that there was some relationship, clearly, because he kept visiting her. This guy Mordechai, he's lost it. He is running around the streets, screaming, a loud, bitter, weeping cry, and he's wearing sackcloth. You got to do something, Esther. Having no idea what's going on. So they come to her, they tell her, v'tischalchal hamalkomo, and she's greatly distressed that this is what's going on. V'tishlach begodim lehalbishes Mordechai, so she sends clothing to clothe Mordechai with, ulohasir sakom me'alav, in order to remove his sackcloth, v'lokibel, but he didn't accept it. Why does she send clothing? Doesn't he have clothing? Excellent. She needs him to tell her what's going on. So she sends him clothing. Mordechai, what's going on over here? Clearly something major. I mean, you're not the kind of guy who runs around screaming in the middle of the streets wearing sackcloth if nothing's happened. What's going on? Here's clothing. Put it on. Come and tell me. So what should he have done? Put it on and go tell her, right? What does he do?
He refuses.
Why does he refuse?
Good question.
So the Vilna Gaon asks that question. He says it in two words. The Vilna Gaon simply says, Loki Bela Rotza lived on Misakov Filu Rega Echad. He was now in his tshuva mode. He had donned his sackcloth, he's in the streets, he's fasting, weeping and wailing, praying, doing his tshuva, and he says to her basically, I'm in the middle, I'm not stopping. I will not put on my clothing, I'm not gonna do it. I'm sorry. He refuses to take the clothing. But Esther doesn't know what's going on still, so it's not going to work. So she's still stuck. So what does she do? Pasuk Hey, Vatzikra Esther lo hasach. So she, all that she knows is that he refused her efforts of sending clothing. So she then sends for hasach. Who's hasach? He's one of the Sarisei HaMelech, one of the chamberlains, Asher Hamilu Faneh, who had been placed before her. Vatitzaveu al Mordechai ladas mazeh. So she commands him in regards to Mordechai, go find out mazeh v'al mazeh. What is this? What's going on? What happened? V'al mazeh, and why did this happen? Something clearly has happened. Esther's clearly the only person who does not know what's going on. The Megillah has already told us, Evel gadol la'yehudim, the entire Jewish people are in mourning. Betzoy muvchiyu mispei, they're wailing, weeping, and fasting. And Esther's trying to figure out what in the world happened. Okay, now those two questions, Vilna Gaon points out, are the critical two questions. Anytime you really want to understand something, well, you need to know what happened, and you need to know why it happened. Mm-hmm. So Esther wants to know, and some foreshadowing of what's going to happen, knowing that she's going to be the one who's going to have to step in and solve this problem, so she wants to have a good handle on what exactly is going on. So Asach goes out to Mordechai, El Rechovir, so they're still in the middle of the street, because Mordechai is not allowed to go into the palace, so he can't really go any farther than what he is right now. So Asach goes out to meet him in the middle of the street. The Vilna Gaon points out, by the way, that you see that Mordechai wasn't embarrassed to be in the middle of the streets like this. He didn't hang out in his base medrash in his sackcloth while he's crying and weeping and doing tshuva. He went out to the middle of the street and got all the Jews to know this is what needs to be done. This is what he was leading them in doing. Asher l'fnei sharim el. So he's out there before the gates of the kingsmen on this fellow, Hasach, one of the officers who had been given over to Esther, goes out to meet Mordechai there. Vayaged lo Mordechai is kol asher karo. So Mordechai tells him all that had taken place. Eis parashas hakesef asher amar haman lishkol al ginzei hamelech vayuhudim la'abdam. And he tells him about not only the decree which went out, but he tells him about the sum of money which had been given from that Haman had offered to Achashverosh to pay. Ches, next pasuk. Yes, Pashegin Ksav Hados. And then he gave him a copy of the text, Asher Nitan Bishushon Ashmidom Nosan Lo Leharos Es Esther. So he gives him a copy of the text. Go bring this to Esther. Let her see firsthand what's going on out here. Ulahagidlo, and to tell her. Ulitzavus Allah, and then to command her, Lavo El Hamelach, to go to the king, Lehischaninlo, to appeal to him, Ulivakesh Milafonov Alama. Now there are a lot of words here, a lot of different phrases that Mordechai is imploring Esther to do this. We read through the text. So that I give it to that, show it to her and inform her. I mean, if he shows it to her, she's gonna know, right? Show it to her, tell her about it, then what? Bid her to go to the king, tell her to appeal to him, plead with him for her people. What do you think Esther's reaction would have otherwise been when she sees this? Esther Hamalka, the prophetess, would not have on her own felt, maybe there's something that I should do here. Mordechai has a need to really, seems to hammer it home. You have to be mischanimo. You need to appeal to him, implore him to be able to do this. Now it's fascinating when you note this, we forget this when we read the story every year, Mordechai and Esther never speak. It's not a direct communication. Mordechai refuses to change clothing, even for a moment, to go speak to Esther directly. Which is just an interesting insight, which I never really fully appreciated myself until just going through this. All that it would have taken would have been for him to change his clothing, he would have gotten into the palace, and he could have spoken face to face and implored her to do it. And he refuses to do that. This entire conversation, in which he's now, till the end of this chapter, going to plead with her and have a whole dialogue in which he's going to say, but I can't. And we're going to read about it, is between a middleman. Because he's refusing, even for a moment, as Olga Gon writes, even for one moment, to remove himself from the place that he was at. He's in his mode, I'm doing tshuva, I'm in my sackcloth, I will not take it off. Just a fascinating insight. In any case, one of the commentators adds, why does Mordechai feel it's so necessary to implore her to be mischanemo, to plead before him, to appreciate yourself before him? So he writes, remember the story that Esther, a Jewess, is now taken and married to a non-Jewish guy. The halacha would be that if they would live together as husband and wife, and she would be a willing participant in this, she becomes forbidden to her husband, who happens to be Mordechai. Correct. Now, as long as she's what's considered ones, as long as she's considered forced, not her option, that doesn't forbid her to remain married when this episode will be over to Mordechai. But if she were to willingly participate, then the status in halacha would be such that she's no longer able to. So Mordechai says to her, I know that you're doing everything in your power not to be mischanemo, not to make yourself look appealing to him. Whatever will happen, but you're not doing your part to engage in any relationship more than you have to, because you are the righteous Esther, whatever's going to happen is because you have no choice in the matter, but it's not because you're interested. You need to change your tune right now, because we need you. The Jewish people need you to be able to go in there and to find his favor. And if that means dressing a little bit differently than you usually do, speaking a little bit differently than you need to do, whatever you're going to need to do different, you need to show this to her, command her, Lavo el Hamelach lehischanemo, command her to come before the king and find favor before him. L'chan arch was translated as appeal to him, but l'chanelo is rooted in matzasi chein be'enecha. If I have found favor in your eyes, do what you need to do to find favor before him. We're going to see, what's her response? Ka'asher avodati, if I go in and I do this, I'm going to be lost forever from you. Says Mordechai, this is what But I'm telling you, I'm going to reiterate it, I'm going to command you, this is what you need to do in order to accomplish what you need to do. Test. Vayavo Asoch vayagei Esther. So Asoch comes to Esther and tells Esther all that Mordechai just told her. So you can just imagine the scene. Again, I'm so amazed by that fact that there's a middleman here. So Esther is waiting in the palace for word, not knowing what's going on. Hosach comes back and says, you know what's going on? Look! Shows her the decree. She now, for the first time, sees that there's a decree upon the Jewish people that are all going to be destroyed on the 13th day of Adar, few months from then, and that Mordechai has told her she needs to go in and save the Jewish people. So she sends back word through Asach to command to Mordechai. And we'll leave with a bunch of questions on this pasuk. Kol avdei ha-melech va'am medinos ha-melech yodim. Everybody, all the servants of the king's reign of his provinces are well aware that if anyone, kolish v'isha, be it a man, be it a woman, approaches the king, elachatzer apnimis asher lo yikorei, anyone who comes in who has not been called, achas daso lehamis, if there is but one law for him, except if what? He'll be put to death, except the person to whom the king shall extend the gold scepter so that he may live. So what's her response? She sees the letter, she understands why he's wearing his sackcloth, she understands what's going on, and Mordechai has now commanded her through Hosach, you need to go in and be mischanemo. You need to go in and beg for the mercy of the king for on behalf of your people. She responds and she says, Mordechai, everybody knows, man, woman, and child, they all know, anyone who goes in without being called,
does the king know she's Jewish?
No. Will be killed, she says to him. And I haven't been called for 30 days. Two questions. Number one, does it matter that everybody knows this?
Knows what?
That anyone who's called, who walks into the king, yes. Let's say nobody in the palace knew that rule, but Esther happened to have known it. She knows because she lives in the palace. Would that have changed anything? What's her argument? What her argument is? I can't go. And he's going to kill me. So why is it relevant for the Megillah to record, for Esther to have said, but Mordechai, everybody knows. Who cares? Everybody knows you can't do that. Who cares? If you know this is dangerous, if you know that you're going to be killed for doing it, all you need to say is, Mordechai, anyone who goes into the king's chamber without being called can be killed. Why does she add, everybody knows? Why is that relevant to her arguments? Question number two. Why does she add at the end, and I haven't been called for 30 days? Why is that relevant? Let's say she had been called 2 days before. Would that be more or less of a reason that she should not go without? Isn't it the rule still the same? Mm-hmm. Was she called today? No. If she goes in, what's going to happen to her? What does she mean to add when she says, and I haven't been called for 30 days? What argument is she making?
Sure, that she's going to get killed. She hasn't been for 30 days. He's not interested in her.
Okay. She hasn't left 30 days.
I leave you with those two questions. You have to come back next week. Sorry. All right, we'll finish up Mitzvah Shem. We'll finish up this chapter next week.